I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Anthony Lacovara joins me now. He's just written a new book that looks at how Canada isn't as successful and at the fore of international entrepreneurship as it should. It's not to say we don't have successful businesses, but we've never had worldwide long-lasting success. Our regulations, business culture, and ingrained mindset are to blame for the many roadblocks to dreaming big, let alone attracting venture capitalists. I'll get Mr. Lacovara to tell us about his book, about his own experience building Wind Mobile, the telecommunications company that, though he sold for $1.6 billion, that he considers today to be a failure. As well, I'll ask him about the prescriptions he has for inspiring and promoting talent and innovation and better entrepreneurship. Anthony Lacovara is a serial entrepreneur who started his first business right out of university. He's a venture capitalist who has a stake in dozens of startups. He's involved in some of the most successful accelerators and incubators, including Mars, Creative Destruction Lab, DMZ, and Next Canada. He is the founder and chair of Global Live Capital and has done business in over 30 countries. He is a regular commentator on television. The book is called How We Can Win and What Happens to Us and Our Country If We Don't, and it is written with Kate Fillion and published by Random House. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Vancouver earlier this week, Anthony Lacovara. Mr. Lacovara, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. So people know you from Wind Mobile, so that's a good place to start because, as you say in the beginning of the book, that wasn't the success that you would have liked it to be. And that has to do with the fact that this country is the way it is. How different is the business culture here than, say, elsewhere where you've done business?
Yeah, I think that's the central theme here, is that we seem to be striving constantly for the bronze medal, as I like to say. We're going for second place, for third place. We're satisfied with not winning. But when we look at our culture from a business perspective, when we look at our culture from a sports perspective, when we play hockey, we unapologetically, passionately go for the gold medal. When we expect to win, no matter how much bigger the country we're going up against is, whether it's the U.S. or it's European countries or China, we expect to win when we play hockey. I'm saying we need to bring that same mentality to our business culture and start going for gold in business.
So some might say that a middling business culture is a trade-off for everything in this country that we seem to enjoy, you know, which sells well around the world, you know, the relatively peaceable nature of healthcare, the social safety net. It doesn't have to be that way, though, right?
Yeah, that's it. I think we can actually capitalize on all of those great strengths of Canada, the balanced lifestyle, the quality of life, the strength of the education and healthcare systems, the support of those in need, the openness, the tolerance, the acceptance of different cultures. I mean, all the things that make Canada great, I'm advocating for us taking all that, the best practices and the best things about us, and exporting them, because the rest of the world does love the way we are. And a lot of people around the world aspire to Canada as a place to be, a great place to go and build their life. So what we got to do is realize how great we are and get out there and export our culture and bring it to our business culture to export globally and build prominent and ultimately dominant global companies.
The so-called backward insular mindset, where does that come from?
I think, look, there's a few things going on. And when I say backward insular mindset, I'm talking about our business culture being protectionist. You know, it has its roots, actually, in the founding of our country. So we were founded as a British colony. We've done extraction of resources and light processing of resources for export to the British Empire in the early days of this country. In more recent days, we export, of course, predominantly to the United States, where 75% of our exports go to the United States. I think that creates a branch plant colonial mindset that we urgently need to shed as a country so that we can go for the number one spot, move up the value chain, and actually supply and goods and services instead of just doing the junior partner role of supplying resources and the ingredients for the end product. We got to become the master chef and stop being the sous chef.
Yeah, I guess Canada's changed a lot in 150 years, hasn't it? that it doesn't have to be the way it always has been.
Well, exactly. I mean, it has changed a lot, but as I, you know, in a lot of ways, it's still the same, and that's what we got to break free from. Yeah, I use the, you know, the same old story is happening today as it happened 150 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of this branch plant approach, I talk about the two Canadians that almost invented the light bulb. Everyone thinks Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. In fact, it was two Canadians in the 1870s, Henry Woodwards and Matthew Evans, that invented the light bulb, and Thomas Edison bought it from them. And Thomas Edison then got all the credit for that innovation. But, you know, there's so many examples like that throughout our history, and I talk a lot about them in my book, a lot of examples of great entrepreneurial stories, of great Canadian founders that have built exciting businesses, and we got to help those entrepreneurs scale globally.
Yeah, I guess we're also just too modest to celebrate success, aren't we?
This is a huge issue, you know. And look, I get that we live north of the loudest, most, in many ways, the most boastful country in the United States. They're loud and proud about celebrating their innovators, their entrepreneurs, and their, you know, and some would say their, you know, their approach is obnoxious, right? And
yeah.
So as Canadians, you know, we don't like to do that. And but the modesty that we have comes at a real price, and unfortunately, that modesty causes us to not get out there and confidently sell Canada and sell the great Canadian brand that we have. And our companies don't strive for the top position because we want to be more modest and wait for the someone to notice us instead of getting out there and promoting what we're doing.
So when you sold Wynn Mobile off a few years back now for $1.6 billion. I mean, people listening to that will think that that's a pretty good success, especially since you started it.
Yeah.
But as you write in the book, people need to read the book for that story. It could have been better, right? It could have been better for you, for your investors. And so that goes to the question that if businesses are sluggish in this country, people might be wondering, well, then what keeps this economy afloat?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when I say it could have been better, is that prices came down 21% in every market that Wynn was operating in. So everybody's got a mobile phone these days, and everybody saw a real benefit from Wynn being in the marketplace. And
mm-hmm.
the reason I consider it to not be such a great success is because I would have never sold the company. I didn't start it to build it and sell it. I started the company to operate it long term. Because of our country's resistance to foreign direct investment, my investors were really prevented from continuing in Canada. And so the company was then sold to a Canadian company, Shaw Communications, which, of course, is a great company in its own right. But Shaw is got a lot of legacy businesses, the cable business, the internet business, the home phone business. Those businesses are being cannibalized by mobile. So right away, as soon as Wynn was sold, the prices in wireless went back up.
Yeah.
And so that's how I consider it to not having achieved long-term what I want to achieve. But, of course, financially, you know, the outcome, as you say, was good. But that's not why I started the company. And so many entrepreneurs start a company from a passion. And I think we have to help entrepreneurs survive long-term and thrive long-term by supporting their success and celebrating their success.
Yeah, so the Wynn Mobile story is a great example of all these walls that you ran up against. And I mean, you talk in the country of the Canada Line here in Vancouver, and how you all wanted access to the connection that TELUS built and maintains.
Yeah.
It gave access to Bell and Rogers, but wouldn't give it to Wynn.
Right.
And you talk about just how difficult it was to even get someone to talk to about that, because you'd go to the sort of government authority that runs the line, and they would they'd pass the buck and they'd redirect you elsewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I have to say, like, in having so much interaction with our government, I really feel like most of the government officials that I've encountered are thoughtful or considerate, but they're like everything else. With respect to our egalitarian mindset in Canada, they think about all the stakeholder input too much and too long. And so what happened was TELUS was able to make all of their arguments, and all that really did was slow Wynn down from having an alternative in the Canada Line. And, of course, once we did have the Canada Line, you know, prices came down even further and service was improved even further. And Canadians, well, in this case, Vancouverites are happy with it. They wanted more of it. They wanted more competition. Our government was just too slow to react, and that's part of my message in my book. One of the ways we need to change so that we can go for the gold globally is we have to take advantage of the fact that we're a small or smaller country. We have to be nimble and agile and adapt our policies and regulations much more nimbly than we have historically. I mean, we're often slower than much bigger countries like the U.S. or China to implement policies that allow our businesses to thrive and become more competitive and export globally. I mean, we have to be the best. I like to say it's a David and Goliath. We're always going to be the David. We're a smaller country, so we got to be the best David we can be. That means we got to be fast, we got to be nimble, we got to be agile.
And you tell us it's almost amusing, but I mean, at the time it was probably you wanted to bang your head against the wall. Well, it was when you were looking for funding from banks and they wouldn't give it to you when you're starting out. So you seek an investor from overseas, and once that's secure, the people in this country were saying, "Well, why do you have to get an investor from overseas?"
You got it. That was the sequence of events, you know, which I think I highlighted in the book as just an example of how we often shoot ourselves in the foot here in Canada. We've got so much going for us. We've got to just, and we're individually generally such good people and smart people. We've got to just use that capability to improve our business culture so that we can be more competitive.
So in terms of the politicians, because they're the ones really that are directing all of this, are you seeing them, the current group that we have, not only in Ottawa but elsewhere throughout the provinces, are you seeing them, say, getting hip to the message of your book?
Well, I'm very critical right now of elected officials that are pursuing, and including this would include the Vancouver city authorities and provincial authorities that are politicians that are pursuing U.S., based technology companies' headquarters. So Microsoft, we have now here landed in Vancouver, and we celebrated that. We're trying to get Amazon to come to Vancouver, and we're celebrating the prospect of that. Yeah, look, the short-term benefit of those companies coming is good jobs for Canadians. So I completely agree with the short-term benefit, and I understand why our elected officials would pursue it. But the long-term impact of having us house the branch plants of big U.S. multinationals is just perpetuating our country's position as the junior partner. We're perpetuating our country's position that we had in extraction and resources, that we have in the automotive industry, where we export Ford, GM, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, Mitsubishi, and there's no Canadian car, but we should have one. And now in the technology industry, we're creating a series of branch plants, and we're celebrating the prospect of creating those branch plants. I am vehemently opposed to that. I think that the talent that can go to those companies needs to go into Canadian technology companies. You think about Vancouver, you've got, you know, D-Wave, Hootsuite, you've got Electronic Arts, you know, which is successfully set the standard in games publishing, you know, globally. We've got great companies in the Vancouver area. They need that talent. Amazon doesn't need that talent.
Yeah, and that's another thing you talk about in the book, that for the longest time we've thought that the greatest success can come from natural resources, but it really is in technology. You mentioned Hootsuite a moment ago, and you know, as a success story, it's been rather good. Hootsuite is fine, but it's certainly not Twitter, and it's not Apple.
Right. But it has the potential to be.
Right.
And this is what the point of my book is right there. It has the potential. D-Wave, the Vancouver-based quantum computer company, has the potential to be a global leader, and we just got to know that we can do it and go out and do it.
There are also interprovincial barriers that I found interesting that you talk about that still need to be overcome in this country. Trade between the provinces. I mean, there's a lot of red tape there, isn't there?
There's tons, you know, and it's hard to believe because it's actually much easier for a small Canadian business to export to the United States than it is for us to export, to trade between provinces, which, you know, that's just something I highlight as, like, and we just urgently need to fix that, because when you look at smaller economies, whether it's Israel or it's the Scandinavian countries, I mean, what you see is some consistent themes where those countries are consistently good at trading internally, and they're consistently good at creating policies and regulations that support the growth of their own company. So I talk about we need to help companies trade domestically and interprovincially by reducing those barriers. I talk about the really urgent need to adjust regulations and policies so that government, for example, is buying Canadian. I mean, we need to create this theme of buy Canadian. So when you have a small Canadian business, whatever goods or service, doesn't have to be technology, it could be in any industry. Why is our government procurement policies not set up to buy Canadian wherever it makes sense? And, you know, that sort of business, certainly U.S. government buys American, certainly Israeli government buys Israeli whenever they can. Why are we just doing it? It's just something as simple as that. So I'm trying in the book, as you can see, to just highlight some simple ways that we can win, just some simple changes that are so obvious that'll really help this country propel itself forward.
And you draw the line in the book that because Canada's overlooked prosperity as it has, it just won't be tenable, the social safety net of pensions and health care itself down the line, right, in the future.
Well, this is it. I mean, everything that we all love about this country, the social safety net, the education, educational academic institutions, the health care system, the fair and strong and democratic institutions that we've got. I mean, everything that we love about the openness, the tolerance, the niceness of Canadians, everything that we love about this country is being jeopardized by our seeming lack of willingness to really bring that aspiration for gold into our business culture. And so my point is that none of our social programs are sustainable with the current revenue growth and GDP growth of our country. It's not sustainable. So it will come to an end. I don't know if it ends in 10 years, in 20 years, or you know, in 50 years, but it's going to end. We're on a trajectory that if you extrapolate out all the macroeconomic trend lines, particularly surrounding gross domestic product growth in Canada, it doesn't look good for us in 10, 20 years. So we're going to have to either cut back social programs and start to look more like the U.S. and other places that we don't necessarily want to look like, or we're going to have to figure out how to make our business environment so much more globally competitive that we're exporting around the world, and then we can fund with new tax revenues, we can fund those programs.
You mentioned your family in the book. Your dad remains your best friend. He's a judge, and your sister's a lawyer. That's an example right there of a Canadian family, a typical Canadian family, and a success story that's come out of that. Well, was entrepreneurship, was that taught to you at a young age?
No, I think if anything, you know, they're obviously, and my dad continues to be my best friend, but I definitely was encouraged more to go the more traditional route, like get a degree, get some experience working for a big Canadian company, and then maybe in 10, 20 years think about starting your own firm. Unfortunately, what happens to so many Canadians that get that advice from their parents is by the time you're 35 years old and you've got a house and a mortgage and you've got a couple of kids, like you can't do what you could have done when you're 25 and you don't have those obligations. So I think what we have to do is look at how at a very early age, one of the things the United States does very well is at a very early age, young Americans know that starting their own business is a viable, acceptable option for them. Going and working at a big company is a good option too. Getting an education, getting a master's degree, whatever, that's good. But also a viable path for you is starting your own business. And that was not in my culture as a, you know, an Italian immigrant family. That wasn't in our culture to get out there and start a business. It was much more about get a good education and go work for Royal Bank or go work for, you know, Nortel at the time. Now, Nortel obviously is gone now, but at the time it was Nortel. And that, I think, we really got to change that about our culture as well and make the option of starting a business something that's acceptable from a very early age.
Are you seeing young people, students today, that they're being taught aspiration as they should?
I believe we're going in the right direction, and it's now very much acceptable to start a business as a viable career path. And there's lots of seed funding. One of the really positive things that's going on in our economy right now is we've got a great series of national incubators and accelerators across all industries that are really helping to propel our technology sector forward. And a lot of young Canadians are seeing those incubators and accelerators as a great way for them to start a business. And I think that's a real positive. What we got to do next, though, is we really have to ensure that there is sufficient venture capital available so that those companies that are started in those incubators can really accelerate and scale to significant size here in Canada. Because what's happening to us is the big global venture capitalists from predominantly Silicon Valley and New York and Hong Kong and London, they're coming up to Vancouver, they're coming up to Toronto and Waterloo, they're coming to those places, and they're investing in these early stage Canadian technology companies aggressively. And what that really means for us long term is, again, a perpetuating of this branch plant economy where, sure, the company might be founded in Vancouver, it might have 100 employees in Vancouver, but if it's majority owned by foreign investors, well, you know, then we still have a situation where most of the economic value is leaving the country.
You write in the book about the success over at BCIT, and how in biomedical engineering that they're at the fore there, and you're seeing, you know, institutions like that really promoting what's good of our students, right?
Yeah, it's amazing what's going on at BCIT and a variety of other academic institutions that are world class. You know, and again, we're so modest as Canadians that we don't like to use that word world class. But you know what? I'm of the view, let's start talking about how awesome we are.
Yeah.
We don't have to give up all of the great things about our culture that the humility and modesty gives us and the likableness that gives us. But without us really getting up and realizing how, like, an organization like BCIT is, if you walk around downtown Vancouver, a lot of people won't really know the positive impact that BCIT is having.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the U.S., though, that organization would be celebrated. You can't go anywhere without hearing about the successes of Stanford or MIT or Harvard. BCIT, you know, as an academic institution, has the ability to stack up to be world class, and we got to start celebrating it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Anthony, 5-10 years down the line, are you hopeful for where Canada's headed?
I feel like if we pursue some of these structural changes that are very achievable that I'm proposing, I feel like our future is very bright. I feel like how we can win. I wrote that book to hopefully give people some ideas for a conversation about the changes that we need to make, that I think we need to make, and I look forward to the conversation with all Canadians about it.
Well, you've written a very thought-provoking book. Congratulations and continued good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.
The book is called How We Can Win and What Happens to Us and Our Country If We Don't. It's published by Random House. Its author, Anthony Lacovera, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.